It is. It is harder. But it's designed for you for children, isn't it? And somebody say that they think I'm I got my in my second childhood. So why not? No, it's great.
Well, I can say I've tried it now.
The parks that I played in as a child, it's like night and day. You know, it's like the difference. You're on the set of Coronation Street in my parks in the 1970s, and the parks in Sydney, you're more likely to be on the set of Star Trek or in a distant planet or in a far-off fantasy land.
Many days I have a list and I achieve maybe one thing off that list, if anything, because at the end of the day you sort of think, well, you know, you're not going to get these moments back, and it's a nice way to spend your days, really, playing outside when it's a beautiful day.
Come on, let's go to the park. My name's Anne Jones, and this week on Off Track, I'm taking you to the playground. Kids' playground imagination is pretty amazing. Think of all those complex games you used to come up with. A concrete tunnel becoming a shop, and then a house, or a hospital, or even better, a hidey hole where no one could see what you're up to. Where did you play when you were a kid? Mark Driver is the Parks and Recreation Planner for the City of Sydney Council.
I spoke to one of our park staff who grew up in this area and I said, where did you play in the 1960s? And he said, we played in the tip in Sydney Park, which used to be an industrial tip at the time. He said, we couldn't tell our parents, you know, but that was the most fascinating place to play. He said, or we played in the street. To the children of that era, you know, maybe that the street was a cricket wicket or a running track.
My name is Guy Di Benedetto. That's an easy one. Normally known as Gaetano Giuseppe Di Benedetto. I'm fully imported, like an Alfa Romeo, but I've been converted to Australian conditions. I originally come from Sicily.
Where did you used to play when you were a kid in Sicily?
We used to play on the street. There was nothing else. And the toys we had was a large stick and a small stick. So the small stick was the ball and the large stick was the bat. What these children have today, they don't realise how lucky they are. I keep telling my children how lucky they are to be in such a beautiful country and so much, it's so easy for them.
How does it make you feel to have these parks around where you live?
Excited. I love green space. The only green space we used to have was where we used to plant the wheat, the broad beans, lentils, the stuff that we grew to self-support ourselves. Here we've got room to play in. It's such a lucky country, and I'm so excited to be part of it.
We are lucky, and the thing about these spaces that, I don't know about you, but seeing all of this equipment makes me want to play as well. Do you think it's the same for you?
Well, I think you noticed that I hopped on some one of the toys. I am 75 years old, but I still feel very young at heart. And yes, it makes me feel like a child again at times. I forgot to take those pills this morning. I'm supposed to be suffering with dizziness. I'm trying this. I tell you what, I'm not doing too bad for 75-year-old, am I?
You've done it before, haven't you?
So we're sitting in the suburb of Erskineville.
This is Leila Ermus, a historian with the City of Sydney.
In the 19th and early 20th century, this was a very congested urban area in Sydney. The people that lived here were probably very working class people. They lived probably very close to where they worked. They lived in houses that were quite small and had very small backyard spaces. The other thing to note is that a lot of the houses, particularly in Erskineville, are actually built quite close to the street front. So they don't have a lot of front yard space. So they're often built right up to the street line.
In these tiny little houses, what would the families have been like?
There would have been a mix, I would say. There would have probably been largish sized families that would have all been living together, sometimes extended families, and often generations of families would have lived together, and that's still a feature of Erskineville. In fact, there's generations of families that have sort of continuously lived in the same house.
Definitely research shows that for humans who live near a park are less likely to suffer from depression, then you're more likely to get out of bed, out of doors, and interact with human beings. So you're going to be physically healthier and mentally healthier too. So today we provide safe places for children, and they may include structures which capture their imagination, like a cubby house, for example, and they can pretend that they're their own little house owner or shop owner. We provide green open space where they can kick a ball around or just be with themselves. Maybe they're not ready to interact with other children, so contemplative space. We provide little stepping stones, little nature trails through open space. Try and provide as rounded experience for children of all abilities as possible.
But it wasn't always like Mark Driver is saying. In the 19th and even the early 20th century, children's play was seen to be disruptive to other activities that occurred in the large open spaces in the city. Parks were for many things, like promenading, not for boisterous play. Children were simply not allowed in many parks. There was an attempt to curb the disorder of children's play, which eventually resulted in fenced-off areas in major parks in the city for supervised and controlled play only. For the workers and their families in Erskineville, it would have been a fairly decent walk to get to any of the big parks to use them. Leila Ermus.
The residents here probably enjoyed the benefits of the parks that were provided centrally, but there wasn't much open space at all. And it wasn't really until the 1930s that some thought was going into that, and that came up with a woman called Lillian Fowler.
Leila took me to the park named after her, the Lillian Fowler Reserve.
Lillian Fowler was a very interesting woman. She was the first lady mayor in Australia. She was one of the first female aldermen. She was the mayor of Newtown Council, I should add, and she was very involved in the local community, not only representing at a municipal level, but also in the provision of playgrounds. So this playground was set aside in the 1930s. What's interesting about this playground is that it actually adjoins a school.
This playground's a particularly good example of shared resources.
That's Prue, who I met at the Lillian Fowler Reserve. She was pushing a large swing filled with kids and having a chat with her friend Janet.
The council owns the playground and the school owns those basketball courts, and they have an arrangement where the community can use the basketball courts all the time and the school uses this playground at lunchtime. So it's a great way of maximising scarce resources.
Hamish's older sister goes to Newtown Public School, which is just there, so we come down here pretty much every morning after drop-off. We have favourite playgrounds that we go to for various things. So we did 5 minutes at Salmon Park this morning for the monkey bars, which there aren't monkey bars anywhere else because they're too dangerous these days. But the older girl likes the monkey bars. So we have, you know, various playgrounds that we pick for various activities.
How do these playgrounds differ from what you played in as a kid?
A little bit safer from what I used to play in. There's certainly a lot more variety. There's probably a little less imagination, I reckon, in modern-day playgrounds. I grew up with lots of, you know, the old tractor and the old rocket and all of that sort of stuff, whereas everything's sort of been safety, OH and nest, to a point where I think there's probably not as much of imaginative play that happens. So it's more of the physical activity and, you know, I mean, that's great for the inner west, I think, because, you know, there's not a lot of outdoor space in the sense that kids don't go roaming as much.
So what sort of things do you think would bring that back?
Less prescriptive equipment. So there's only one thing you can do on this. You can swing and that's it. But some of the old equipment, you used to be able to tunnel through things and turn it into cubby houses and they would create things out of it. Those spinners, all you can do is spin on them and they don't pretend they're anything else. And so things that enliven their imagination again. Even just, I love the landscaping here, but more natural play elements as part of that as well.
There's an open grass area which is just about the right size to have an informal game of cricket or kick a ball around. There's the sensory garden. We've got the playground. Half of it has got accessible play equipment which you can move around easily. The other section is more tactile and it's got the bark mulch. And we have the basketball and netball facilities for children of an older age, youth age.
Mark Driver, describing the Lillian Fowler Reserve as it is today. But who was this woman who in 1936 had this park named after her and whose efforts are benefiting Prue and Janet's children today?
She was pretty amazing, Lillian Fowler. She had a lot of, I guess, trailblazing under her belt by the time she created this park and other playgrounds within the area. She was a single mother, she was an alderman, she was a mayor. She was also involved as a member of parliament, one of the first women in that level as well. So she used her position of authority to advocate for playing areas for children in the urban space. I think she had a recognition that children were part of the urban environment and that they were playing on the streets and that they needed safe spaces to be able to play and to participate in urban life. I guess that's from her own experience. She was a single mother as well, which she was in quite an unusual position. She would have been involved with the local Labour Party and the Labour movement, so she would have devoted a lot of time to that. A lot of women were involved and often their contribution wasn't really acknowledged. They did a lot of work behind the scenes.
Is it known what her personality was like? What was it that pushed her to come from behind to being a mayor?
I would have said that she would have been a woman of very strong convictions. She would have had to be very tough to be not only a mayor and alderman of an inner city municipality like Newtown, but also the Labour Party it's a very male dominated institution, particularly in the early 20th century. So she would have been, you know, had the courage of her convictions to actually take on that role. So I think, yeah, she would have been pretty pushy and pretty pretty pushy lady.
So let's put this in a bit of context. It's between the wars, and in 1936, the Newtown Council buys an old brass foundry to create the reserve.
So there was a thing called the Parks and Playgrounds Movement, which was emerging in the 1930s, and that was about providing spaces for children in the city and other users as well. And that was a very sort of influential movement. It was guided by sort of movers and shakers in Sydney. There was this real idea around nation building. So if you create sort of structured learning for children in open space, then you are in some sense providing sort of an opportunity for nation building, because you're creating good citizens who know how to participate, they know how to be socialised, they know how to treat each other fairly. So it's a very building blocks kind of approach.
But it wasn't just people from this nation who were contributing to the establishment of parks in the inner suburbs of Sydney. There was also a Dutch ballerina with a fake Russian name, but more on that story in a minute. You're listening to Off Track on RN, and I'm Anne Jones. Today, we're in Erskineville, an inner suburb of Sydney full of tiny terrace houses, and it's directly under the airport flight path. Scattered in among the terraces are many, many parks, some of them tiny patches of green where one of the minuscule houses has been knocked out. They're so small that the council calls them pocket parks. I met Josie at one of the parks. She grew up in Petersham, another suburb of Sydney.
We had a few parks, but nothing dramatic like this. I suppose because there's so many more people, there are more residents and, you know, lots of small living, like a lot more units. There was no units as far as I remember when I was a child. Children need play. They don't just need to be doing computers and their, whatever they call their little play, you know, Nintendos or whatever, something they call. No, they need interactive things so that they keep, and with the way the people seem to be getting so much fatter, and it's just an epidemic. So I think play thing is very, very important.
Mark Driver, Parks and Recreation Planner for the City of Sydney, had parents in Northern England who must have had an inkling at his future career. They bought his childhood home on a street called Park Avenue. It had a big playground at the end.
My important friendships when I was 4 or 5 years old were all founded in a public park. And it probably didn't matter what the play equipment was in that park. But I do recall that it was the traditional swing sets and the giant slide. It was like a rite of passage when you summoned up enough courage to climb the steps of the slide yourself and slide down that chute for the first time. It was a very, very energising experience. Now, safety standards today would prohibit a slide of that magnitude in one of our parks. But that's given a challenge to our designers, and they've had to come up with more creative solutions to engage children. And as we've seen today, there was a piece of play equipment that gave me a lot of pleasure. And Joe, who was with us today, who's 75, he seemed to be enjoying himself on that play equipment. This is play equipment design that could easily be used by children of all ages, and it's still capturing my imagination and challenging me physically and mentally to have a good time on it. And we did have a good time on that equipment.
What do you think is so important about play?
Well, play is our first experience of socializing with other people. It provides a very, very strong foundation to set us on our way through life. So how we bond with other people, there's a lot of challenge there physically and mentally. It gives you a sense of accomplishment. Imagine the sense of accomplishment you've got as a child when you get to the top of the climbing wall and you're sat on the top viewing your domain, your play space. All the other children are below you. Maybe that's a microcosm of professional development to come in your life.
Quite a few of the pocket parks in Erskineville have been recently done up. But done up or not, what sort of role does a tiny patch of green play in a local resident's life? Leslie lives in nearby Balmain, but she grew up in Scotland and spent many years living in Asia.
I do think it's one of the downsides of living in a very heavily populated urban area. What you do miss is that ability to run around, climb, clamber, fall, do a physical challenge, climb a tree, the things that country children would do automatically, especially if you're very small houses, very small courtyards. So there's not even a garden to run around in. So parks become really vital.
Why do you think that playing is important?
Because, I mean, it is sort of both body and mind. And yes, at school you will get sort of organised PE, and you will certainly run around probably a concrete playground at lunchtime. But that ability to use your imagination and clamber and do things that actually you feel that an adult watching might not like you to do is half the fun of being a child. It's not always been kept within very tight boundaries. And I think, too, for communities, I think it's great for mothers. You know, a bit like meeting at the school gate. I think meeting in a playground, you might be new to the area and really quite lonely. It's fantastic to meet mums with children the same age as you.
Well, it's happening just now behind us, isn't it? There's a little group of children and parents.
Absolutely. And I do think that that's one of the... I certainly found that when I was moving around a lot with very young children, that when you're the new person in the neighbourhood, it's not actually that easy to meet other people in the most common ways through your children. So playgrounds are a fantastic community resource.
So this open space then, through your life, moving around has been imperative.
Well, it has, and sometimes the open space has been very, very small. places like Hong Kong, we had a tiny little grassy patch, and you'd think it was it was tiny. It was probably no bigger than that little triangle there, but to the children it was a green lung, and they met all the other children there, and the mums met there. But Hong Kong, that's really urbanised.
Though Leslie's children are all grown up and have kids of their own, mums with Litleys right now have almost exactly the same experience of community in the parks. Here's Janet and Prue again.
I mean, I think the thing that they do is they create a space for kids to play with other kids and parents to meet with other parents. And I think as a consequence, there's a lot more of a community feel. People meeting in playgrounds and that sort of thing. Whereas, if you live out in the burbs, you can drive into your garage and you never have to even speak to your neighbour. Whereas here, you they meet lots of different kids and you meet lots of different people. And, even if they're a stranger, you'll talk, you'll ask, how old's your child? And before you know it, you'll be talking about all the things, the challenges of parenting, really.
Yeah. Well, I think that I saw that a little bit here because you were talking to another friend when I arrived. Yeah.
Yes, and he called said we were having a conversation about something that was happening at school, and we were talking about it being the playground network. That's how you find things out.
Perhaps you find out about local ballet classes. The pocket parks of Erskineville are named after a range of women. We've heard about the trailblazing Lillian Fowler, a woman who fought over many years for children's play space.
And we've also heard that in the 1930s there was a movement towards providing space for children that would lead them to grow up as fine, fit citizens. It all fits rather neatly and logically together with the previous identity of the suburb as working class and labour strong. But there's a bizarre twist. It's 1943. Wartime. A woman buys land outright for children's space. She certainly knew the value of physical activity because she was a professional dancer. Her stage name was Helena Kursova.
Playground that's named after one of my favourite Sydney identities. Her name was Helena Kursova. She was a ballet dancer. She's actually Danish born. Her Danish name is Ellen Hansen. She was a member of the Ballet Russe and she came to Australia in the 1930s and performed here in the Ballet Russe. But then she decided to stay on. She married a Danish consular official, had a son. But what she did, she made two really important contributions to Australian cultural life. One is that she started a Russian ballet school, which was down at Macquarie Place. She also started Australia's first professional ballet company. And it wasn't just a dance company, it was a mecca for all sorts of artists. But the other thing that she did was she was quite a wealthy lady. So she was a bit of a society dame, I guess you could call her, and she lived in the eastern suburbs of Sydney with her Danish consular official husband and her young son. But what she did was she donated all of the proceeds from the first season of her ballet company, in fact all of the seasons of her ballet company's performances, to buy up land in Erskineville and in Glebe. We are in a little park, a little pocket park. It's called Kursova Number 1, and it's the first of the playgrounds donated by Helena Kursova to the children of Sydney. But what's interesting about this park is that it's right next to a railway line. The features that are used within the park, the landscaping features, really reference the railway use. So it's got quite an industrial feel. There's also some artwork, which is against the back wall, very colourful.
Yes, some of the artwork, in fact, is almost like Lloyd Wright. It's very modern with the shapes and colours blocked out with circles and squares intersecting, like a modernist lead light window almost.
Yeah, it's got this quite lovely element. And then you've got writing, so you've also got a bit of a, I guess, a large colourful tag on the other side, but it's quite atmospheric. And really, there's some very big trees which are growing over the top of this park, and I think they really give... that obviously gives shade for the children to be playing here and give atmosphere to the park.
It certainly does. They come over almost like a cathedral roof, sweeping over the top of the park to give a sense of enclosure, even though we're standing next to a very large construction site squashed in between apartments and the rail. It feels quite peaceful.
It does, yeah. Not quiet, but peaceful.
You'll notice the play apparatus, the central piece, is a rope climber. It's a horizontal corridor of suspended ropes. And if you cast your eyes up to the railway embankment, you'll see that it mirrors the gantry that's suspending the cables for the supply of power to the trains. So it's very, very industrial. You could think if Marilyn Manson or Nine Inch Nails were designing a playground, this is probably what they would come up with.
Those rails, which are sticking straight up in the air, very recognisably rails, are mirrored on the other sides by, is that Grand... No, it's called, isn't it...
Sansevieria?
Yeah, or the, not elephant plant, but mother-in-law's tongue?
Mother-in-law's tongue, that's Sansevieria, yes. That's a very hardy, bulletproof plant for a playground. We could walk over that and crush it and it would grow back again.
Just one question before we leave. Because you've studied Kursova a little bit.
Yes.
You know quite a bit about her. What do you think she'd think of this modern form of this playground as it stands now? Because it is a very, very modern space.
I think it's different to what she probably envisaged in the 1940s. But I think that her commitment was really to providing space for urban dwelling children to play in. So I think in the spirit of her. I think that she would have actually quite liked this. I don't know that much about her, but I think that what she really wanted was open space that children could be participate in. And I think that even though the equipment's upgraded and it's very different to what it would have originally been, I think it's such a great space for children. So I think she would have liked that.
just two of the very many different women who have parks named after them in Erskineville, and two of the 400 green spaces that the City of Sydney looks after. Thank you to Layla Ermus and Mark Driver from the City of Sydney, and to Guy, Leslie, Josie, Janet and Prue for letting me interrupt their playtime. Remember, you can listen to other off-track episodes as well as see photos of the playgrounds if you go over to our website, abc.net.au/radionational, and follow the prompts. It was refreshing to put on my sneakers and get out into the playground this week, and I have to say, it really lifted my mood to be out in the green space. And it also brought out a council worker's playful side.
Do you know why crabs walk sideways? Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside.
My name's Anne Jones, and I'll take you somewhere else next week.
A guy walks into a bar. It's hurt. It was an iron bar.
Just wipe your head. Shake your head.